It's just, I know.
That's true.
And by the way, I know, I always love doing these in a studio, and here I am with this.
No,
but I love
the... I want you to do your thing.
No, but I'm saying I love the the little just about it all, where it's like, yeah, you've got the best mic, totally.
You can make records anywhere, though, remember?
And then here I walk in with... I'm saying, you know what? I kind of love it. All right, here we go. You ready?
I'm ready.
I'm in Nashville with Ken Coomer.
Yeah!
Ken, thank you for having me over today.
Thank you, Dave.
In his, I mean, I guess we call it home studio, but this is a very special.
Oh, thanks.
Very special.
We call it Cartoon Moon, and I tried to tap on the vibe of Laurel Canyon. You know, that's what I wanted, was a studio in a house, and that's kind of what we hit. So,
yeah.
Very happy here. Very, very.
Yeah, as well you should be, man. And you were showing me the live room. And I was asking, wait a minute, you had this, because it, I have to say, I mean, it just looks lived in.
Good.
Even that live room.
Great.
So when I saw, like, the vocal, you know what I mean, the door and everything, and you're looking around like, wait a minute.
My wife,
this looks like it's been here a long, long time.
Oh, yeah, no,
and that's why
7
I was like,
years.
But that's why, yeah, but it looks like it was, you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like...
And my wife picked out the door she found. And
looks like it's from the 40s or the 50s. I can't tell, you know? And I was like, wait a minute. And he's like, no, I had this built out. And he started and I said, hold it. Let's save it.
Yeah, no, you're right. It wasn't a house and I was renting a studio. You know, when I came off the road and, you know, we can backtrack to all that. It was always the battle of live or studio. And I know a lot of drummers like one or the other, but I like both. So I was always trying to find that balance of going on the road or playing on records.
Yeah.
And at the end, not the end, but I landed after being on the road for 18 years. I don't go on the road. I make records and I play on records. And this is paradise to me, man. I'm in walking distance from where I sleep. You know what I'm saying?
He showed me. It's true.
It is true.
It's crazy.
Thank you.
And it makes a great man cave. I mean.
Oh, when I'm fed up, this is where I go. I mean, it's where I go. And so, and when she's fed up, this is where I go. So.
And when you're not fed up.
Yeah.
You just come here every day anyway.
Yeah, I do. Every day I come down here.
So, yeah, you're, as a musician,
right,
done with the road or for now?
Yeah, unless, you know, I have my master list if they called.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah, of course. Everybody does.
Can we name them?
Well, you could guess and you would know. You could take... Dave, you could name 10 artists and you'd get 6 of them right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess so.
You know.
Yeah.
It's those guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely I'd go.
Tom Waits.
Yeah, of course.
Right. I got you. I got you.
You knew that.
You already know that.
You know
exactly.
That.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I got you.
To bang on pots and pans and metal this and that and hear him sing up front. Yeah. But I think his son's playing drums with him, and you know how that works out.
Yeah, yeah, that's the...
And he's great.
The Rye Cooter walking...
Exactly.
You got to make your own.
Yeah.
These days. You got to make your own drummer.
Yeah, apparently so.
Mold him from
birth. I have
an
11-year-old. He comes
Let's
down
go.
Here. He couldn't be more bored. He's out of here in 15 minutes to go make video games. And you know, more power to him, but...
Yeah. Well, there's still hope. Who would I just talk to? He started at 12. There's still hope.
Really?
Maybe.
He's left-handed, so that's pretty groovy.
Ooh, a southpaw. I like the left-hand drummer thing. Why not, man?
And he's 5'9".
Isn't Joey Waronka? How do I say that name?
Joey Warnaker.
Warnaker. See, I don't even know that. See?
Yeah, yeah.
How do I not know that? But I'm the guy who said Vinny Culaccia.
Oh, well, yeah, I would abuse that name.
Well, how would you know how to
say... No, I wouldn't
remember
know
those
how
days?
To say that.
Do you remember those days?
I've heard other people say it,
But do you remember the days where you didn't know how to say it?
Yes.
What did you think it was?
What did I think? Let's say Vinny. No, I might have. No, I don't know.
You don't remember what you thought?
It wasn't Cola Yita or something like that. I'm sure I abused it. I'm sure I ran it down. You know what I'm saying?
Someone told me.
Who's the drummer that played with the woman from Canada? I abused his name.
The woman from Shania Twain?
No, Ash.
She's not from Canada. Wait, what am I talking about? Who's the woman from Canada? Oh, Alanis.
No. The drummer,
Ann Murray.
Ash Sohn or something like that. I mean, I don't know the guy. He's probably a great guy. But great drummer.
But what singer from Canada? I don't know what this means.
He played with Sarah McLachlan.
Oh, right, Sarah McLachlan.
I clapped my hands and your meter went ba-bam.
Look at the sound. The studio guy.
No, I saw the red light. I got freaked out, man.
No. But also, I was referencing the fact that here I am using this hand recorder. I love doing that with someone's, like, professional
studio. I love that.
Studio.
I was even going to tell you, look, let's not go through all the fancy mic pre's. I want it the way you do it.
Well, that's
when I put on my earbuds and I'm riding my bike and I listen. Yeah.
And you'll just be like, God, this sounds like shit. I could have totally got a better sound.
Oh, no.
This is all analog.
Yeah. Well, no. I have Pro Tools, but everything runs through that fabulous MCI tape machine with the transformers.
Damn.
So it hits that. So it sounds like tape because I work with a lot of young bands, and the thing I figured out early on is when you rewind tape with young guys out there, they pull out their phones and start checking their messages, and we lose the whole vibe and concentration and everything. So I had a friend of mine make everything run through there, and we don't stop. So we can still edit fast in Pro Tools. And
interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting, just to get the vibe.
Yep. Well, and the sound.
Now, I ask, I'm going to jump ahead because I like...
Go anywhere.
I'm all over the place.
You know this.
No, you know. But, like, I was going to ask you, a lot of guys, I'll say, like, what makes a great producer? And they've, you know, everyone's got their answer. And there's some similarities. But I want to know, because, I mean, obviously, you've been on both sides.
I have.
So you're like one of those, it's like an actor who becomes the director.
Yeah.
And that's always the spiel, right? They're like, I know how to talk to an actor.
Right.
Right?
That's right. Yeah.
So do you look at it that way? I mean,
man, I think drummers make great producers. I mean, think about who in the band has to listen to every fool up there. And I say that with love. But, you know, I have to listen to the guy singing. I got to lock with the bass player, hopefully. And then there's the guitarist over here. And, you know, we have to listen. And the bass player doesn't really have to listen to anybody but us. The guitarist didn't listen to anybody. And the front guy, what's he doing? You know, he's checking out the talent. And that's a fact, man. That's a fact. Producers make great drummers because they have to listen.
See, I should be the front man.
Are you the front man?
Well, you just gave the job description. All he's doing is checking out the talent. And I'm like, what am I doing?
Now, that's for the road manager to do. But yeah.
Shit.
That's true.
But you were saying, like, you had this pull towards it, would you say?
I don't know. I stumbled into it. I came off the road, you know, my exit from Wilco. I came off the road, and then who's that cat in L.A. that would find musician Barry? That guy.
Yeah.
That guy called me when he knew I was out of Wilco and named some big bands to go out with, but it was still... Even at any level, you're still going to be gone. I wasn't married at the time. I didn't get married until I left the road. So, but you still got to go out on the road. It's a nicer suitcase. Maybe you're flying. You're going to be in buses. But it's still being gone all the time. And I'd done that. And, you know, I turned down some gigs that, you know, every once in a while you go like, whoa, I wonder what... That's fine. So then I'm just at home thinking, okay, what am I going to do? I know what I want to do. I want to be in the studio. So... I'm at home, and then I get a call from a dear friend, Dan Baird, who played guitar in the Georgia Satellites. He said, there's a cat from the Netherlands in town. We're going to do covers. It pays stupid good. We're going to do it at Exit Inn. Come on down. It's me and some other guys. He loves Americana and blah, blah, blah. Right. Boom. So I go down there, and before we're about to go on, I'm outside. I'm really having my come to Jesus moment, like, Is this what I'm gonna do now? Is this the card I've been dealt? And I'm looking up, and then I hear this kid playing at a coffee shop. So I tell Dan, and his voice is unbelievable. I tell Dan, I'm gonna run over here, I'll be right back. I say, all right, whatever. So I go over there, it's this kid sitting there playing acoustic guitar, women all around him. I was floored. I didn't drop any band names, any of that horse shit. I wrote my name and number down on a napkin and gave it to him. He called me. Long story. I wound up recording demos with him with a friend of mine. I didn't know how to engineer anything. Made the demos. I knew all these record company people from being on the road. Because when you're out on the road and you're in the, you know, like Critics' Darling band, even if you're not a big band, because, you know, it wasn't a big band, they always want to take you out to dinner. They had expense accounts, you know, those fancy credit cards, you know? So they'd come to sound check and they'd say, hey, would Jeff want to go out? You know, Jeff Tweedy, would you want to go out to dinner or something tonight? And usually Jeff walk around smoking a cigarette, and I don't want to go out with those guys. And so the road manager would be kind of embarrassed in that situation, would ask me or the other southern guy in the band, John, the bass player, you guys want to go out? And, you know, sometimes John would have something planned or whatever. So I'd go out with all these record company guys. They'd buy me sushi. I was like, I like sushi. Let's go. I'm in San Francisco. Buy me some sushi. So we'd go out, and I'd get to know them. Some of them were, you know, bean counters. Some of them were nice guys. Some of them are still friends today. But in the music business, you don't get fired if you're at a record company. I don't think you do. I think you get promoted. So all these guys move up the ladder, and then I have this artist. Ta-da! Here's the string. So I'm not Walmart. I don't send out anything I work on. It's the first thing I've ever done. I send it out. I get these rave reviews, like unbelievable, you know, and this and that. And this is the glory day. It's like 2005. So they said, we'll fly him out. We'll fly him out. We'll fly you out. We want to hear this guy. So it just keeps escalating. We're going to president of record companies' houses. We're like, they had on matching pajamas. It was insane, man. This was a period where they did that. So my kid's there, and he's playing. And long story made shorter, this good friend of mine in New York, RCA, signed him. Turned out he was a bipolar nightmare, and the record never came out. But dig this. They sent me a checkbook. It's RCA. They sent me an embossed black checkbook with Nipper on it. Like, go. And then I said, who's going to produce it? And then went back and forth and said, we love your demos. Why don't you produce it? So then it was mind blown. I had no idea I was about to do this kid's record. Then they sent me the checkbook. I got a little ahead of myself. I get the checkbook and I'm like, I get to go find musicians for an artist? You're going to let me go find the music? So I start with the drummers. I called Matt Chamberlain. He was booked. I called Steve Jordan. Wait. First I called Pete Thomas from Elvis Costello's band.
Yeah.
Love Pete.
Yeah.
He was booked. He was out on the road with Elvis. Then I called Steve Jordan. He couldn't do it, but he recommended Charlie Drayton. So I got Charlie Drayton to come play on it. So I had Charlie Drayton, Peter Stroud from Sheryl Crow's band, great guitarist. He recommended Audley Freed. So he came. I didn't know. That's the first session he did in Nashville. And then I'd done some records with Taras, and I don't want to abuse his name at all, Podenuck, that played with Lucinda Williams and Dwight Yoakam, at him come. So I'm looking around for studios, and I wound up doing the first record at Blackbird. They were wiring underneath the place. Dig this, man. So, I mean, I wouldn't have got, none of this would have happened if I was still on the road with Wilco. So to me, it's like, next chapter, let's go, right? Okay, so.
What year is this, by the way?
2005.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Drayton flies in, like, silver jacket, hair up like, you know, his hair to the gods, Don King. I'm a fan, man. I'm trying not to germ him. I'm a fan. I know what he's done. And I know he plays bass, too. So he comes in, and he's kind of checking me and the engineer. Engineer's a great friend of mine, wonderful engineer out of L.A. that moved to Nashville, worked at the Village for years. And I'm rambling, so you stop me anytime.
Nah, you are doing so good. Go.
Okay, all right. So Drayton gets here, and he's kind of checking us out, seeing if we're full of shit or not. You know, and I negotiated with his manager because I'm the producer, so I got to make those heavy phone calls. He's here. And the first thing he says, so I had my Slingerland kit in there, my endorsement kit set up. That's a great sounding kit. I got it in my last year at Wilco. It's, you know, it's beautiful. He says, send the runner to go get some sandpaper. He says, go get quadruple aught sandpaper. We're like, okay, what's this guy done? He said, also tell him to get popcorn kernels. I said, okay. So I tell the assistant or the runner, go get it. So they go get it. They come back. You know, drums are all set up, new heads, everything. I'm excited as a kid on Christmas. And he starts sanding all the heads. I was like, all right, I'm going to watch this. What's going to happen?
Because they're brand new heads?
I don't know. Maybe there's some reason. Doesn't matter. Takes the lugs off the, you know, it's a double floor tom. The 16x18 takes the lugs, or the 16x16. Takes the lugs off, pulls the head off, throws the popcorn kernels in there, puts the head back on, goes around the drums, I was in. That's it, man. That's it for me. I was done. That's great. So then he played on half the record, and I played on half the record. I wouldn't have played on any of the damn record. But it was, and I'm so proud of the record, it never came out. It never came out. The kid was a bipolar nightmare. End of story.
Yeah.
But, that you know, thing. Those things happen, man.
That thing.
But I got to work, and Ian McLagan was on it from The Faces.
Ian?
Yes. I knew him from playing with Billy Bragg.
Yeah.
He lived in Austin for a while. He died. He's no longer with us, man. He was the nicest. He stayed at my house to save money. Stayed at my house. Now, dig this. I'm a single guy.
Where's he flying from?
I don't know. I think he was in L.A. at that time. Okay. I think so. He wasn't in Austin, I don't believe. I could be wrong about that.
Okay.
But he's staying at my house. He's staying at my house. I'm a bachelor. I got 5 Hammond organs in my house. Everyone thought I was a hoarder. I just wanted a studio, man. So I wake up. It's the day we're going to start. I wake up, and there sits Ian McLagan. I swear to God, why I didn't take a picture of this is beyond me. He's in, like, the Bay City Rollers pajamas, like the plaid pajamas. And I get up, and he's playing my Hammond organ. He says, "Mate, I made coffee. It's in there." So I was like, once again, another reminder of, if I was on the road, this wouldn't be happening. So, and he killed it, man. It was great. It's such a wonderful experience. No one ever heard the record. People got fired because this bipolar kid who had the gift of, I had Coldplay's manager fly in trying to work with. The kid blew it. But, you know, I hope he's well.
Do you know anything about him?
He's here in town sweeping floors, working at restaurants.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? There are probably 1,000 of those stories out there.
Yeah, but that's rough.
That's a bad one.
How old do you think he is right now? Today?
He was 24 when we did that
record. And that was 2005.
Yeah.
Wow, bro. Bro.
Good looking guy. He looked like the younger version of Dave Gilmore. Sing his ass off, play his ass off. This is right when...
Because he was brought in for sexiness, wasn't he, Gilmore? Not for his playing? No, I'm half joking.
I don't know.
I'm joking, because, you know, you're right. Like, you see the pictures
no,
of him.
Look.
No, I'm saying young David like. Gilmore. That was a strapping, you know...
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Like, no homo. That's a good-looking dude.
But
you know
he's
what I mean?
The guy that didn't know he was hot. That has that
yes.
look to me. And that's what this kid, whose name was Josh, I won't say his last name, but...
Right. They're always named Josh.
Yeah, I think so. So, that's part of that story.
But you got to work with Drayton and learn about... And by the way...
Drayton was great.
This episode is brought to you by Orville Redenbacher. That's going to be my... By the way, my really? My tie... Well, the Colonels.
Oh.
Yeah. See what I did
that's
there?
That's good.
Charlie's
what
right.
A tie. That's a professional, right?
Well, I'll tell
that's
you
a
something. Because
right
you
there.
Just taught a bunch of drummers out there...
Oh, I did it.
And now they're like, damn right you did.
I was in Memphis working at Sam Phillips' studio the first time. I did the same damn thing.
You were like,
thing.
I'm going to need some sandpaper and some popcorn.
And what did
crumbs.
Jerry Phillips, Sam's son, who wasn't producing the session but was hanging around the studio, call me after that? What was my nickname after that? Popcorn. They call me Popcorn.
Well, that's why I'm talking about Orville. See, I would have went with Orville Redenbacher. Come on, baby.
Call me Redenbacher.
Well, I mean, I think it's brilliant, and like I said, you just taught a bunch of people.
Oh, right on. And yeah, now, it's fun. Yeah.
It's like right out of Fletch for me. I don't know why. I'm going to need some gauze pads and some ball bearings.
Well, you know, the engineer was an older cat.
It's like Fletch, man.
Everybody thought... Drayton's just, man, this is...
What the hell you need ball bearings for?
Stick, yeah.
What the hell you need kernels for? What is this?
It was like, from upstate New York, and he didn't suffer any...
But this is like the movies, too, where she's going to give birth, and they're always like, go boil some water.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
We don't need
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah,
it's to
yeah.
keep... It's like, go get the runner.
Get some gauze, boil me some water.
That's what I'm saying.
And make a pot of coffee. That's usually how the movie goes, and then they're up till 5 a.m., and there's a baby.
So, okay, hold on. Let's back up.
I am a native... Let's get that out of the way.
Native Tennessean?
Nashvillian.
Ooh. Now that's...
None of us.
That's a rare bird.
Jerry Rowe is. Did you interview Jerry?
I talked to Jerry. Fuck yeah, dude.
Jerry's a badass.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But don't let him know it. No. Edit it out.
No.
Now, I've known Jerry since he was a teenager, man. Because I worked with records with his dad.
Oh.
And he always said, hey, you're producing more and more. Why don't you get my son to play on it? I thought it was nepotism. And I was like, yeah, Dave, I don't think I'm good. I play on most of my stuff, or I hire drummers. And he's like, and come to find out, I hired him one time and it was amazing.
Yeah.
Like amazing. This funk band from New Jersey. I watched him do his chart where he just does like slashes that make no sense to anybody in the world.
Right.
Like, I think maybe he has a photographic memory and this is all for show too.
Right.
And then never misses a beat. He's another level.
That's sick.
He's really good. I'm a fan of drummers. Yeah. You know, I don't know. And now here's a funny thing.
Of course
you are. My ADHD is kicking in. Can you tell? So it's that deal. I don't think guitarists sit around and talk about guitar. I mean, everybody loves Jeff Beck and I love Jeff Beck. But guitarists don't talk about guitarists. Drummers, I think, man, it really is a family. I'm going to be cliche.
Well, do guitars even get together and hang out?
No, I don't think so.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't think there's a guitarist lunch, and I know there's a drummer's lunch.
Is there a bassist lunch?
No, probably not.
See what I mean?
That's what I did over the pandemic. I learned how to play bass.
Oh, okay.
I'm playing bass on some of my records. Yep.
Who are some of your bass guys that you look
that
to?
That I use?
That you look to as like, I want to play like him.
Ooh, that's a great question.
Are you
no
James Jamerson, or are you?
Oh, please! Oh my God! Wish it. No, because that is unbelievable.
Well, who did you hear and go? I want to be him.
That's a good question.
John McVie.
I got to work with the guy from NRBQ. Oh, I'm drawing a blank. His name Tommy. Not
whoa.
Tommy. Oh crap! I actually played on the Steve Earle record. And he was a bass player. And I'm drawing a blank, but his playing. He played a Dan Electro Longhorn, and his playing was bizarre, and I loved it. But I love the whole simple, I like simple bass players.
That's
the best way to put it.
That's what I thought.
I like real
simple. But isn't James Jamerson considered simple?
No.
That's not.
No, if you solo, they're on YouTube, if you solo one of his, it's movement, but it's never wrong. I mean, I'm a fan of bass. The funny thing...
No, school me, baby, because I would have put him in like more... Like, I would think Al Jackson Jr. I would call simple, even though I know that gets shit.
As a
shit.
Drummer? Yeah.
Phil Rudd is pocket. Simple. That doesn't mean it's easy to play.
Pocket.
It's not easy to play.
No, it's not easy to play.
So when I use the word simple, I'm not referring to easy.
No.
I thought James Jamerson was simple.
No. No.
So who's...
Movement.
Who's more examples of simple bass playing?
Simple bass
playing. Now that you bring that up.
You know, Daryl Jones plays really simple with the Stones in a great way, I think.
Yeah, okay.
You know, it's all about key. Charlie always listened to, you know, it's Charlie and Keith. And I don't think Daryl ever gets in the way. I'm trying to think who is a good simple...
Mario Cipollina?
I don't know who that is.
Okay, Huey Lewis in the News. I'm just throwing out names.
Oh, that was good.
I'm literally just throwing out, like... Ephus pitches at you at this point.
Ephus, I played baseball.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I know what a fungo bat is, my friend.
We'll play a little pepper.
I played some pepper. It's true.
Yeah.
I had no control, but I could throw hard.
This is an interesting thing. You're fast. This simple. Like
bass players.
Adam Clayton?
Yeah, exactly. Learned to play, went to art school, learned to play by being in a band.
Yeah.
Think about that for a minute.
Driving, just... Stay in there.
I just like simple pockets, just
simple,
not fancy.
No, I get it.
Not Larry Graham, who I appreciate and respect.
Michael Anthony on any Van Halen album, you can't hear him on, right?
It doesn't
because
matter
how simple
his harmony is ridiculous.
No, I'm just saying, if you can't hear it, it must be right. You yeah. follow me? It's not even there.
Maybe not that far.
Okay. All right.
Let's back it up.
All right. We'll get off that. I want to back up to like so. You kept bringing it up. You got off the road with Wilco.
Yeah.
How long again? We talking?
I was there till 2000. So I've been out a while.
No. But I mean from until.
Oh, was in Uncle Tupelo.
Uncle Tupelo.
And
right.
That's a story. And,
right.
How I got in that.
Okay.
From Uncle Tupelo to Wilco. Was 95 to 2000.
All right, let's do it. Let's go back.
Okay.
That's a story.
Okay.
Uncle Tupelo.
All right. So, before Uncle Tupelo, I was in this band called Clockhammer.
Right.
Which you probably never heard of, and that's okay. It's a three-piece power, monster power trio. All we did was practice. We were louder than a tornado. Odd time signatures,
yeah,
jazzy. You can find it on all your favorite listening services. But it was a power three piece, And we were in the indie world. We got an indie deal out of New York. And we went on the road. We went out with Firehose. Like, Mike Watt adopted us. So we did a whole bunch of dates. Went up to New York. Everything. That was the love of my life. And then couldn't have been more proud of that band. And the manager we had was kind of a shyster, if I may say so. And we're looking at producers for our record, right? And we got a budget. Not much of a budget. We got a budget. We're going to go make the record. We're talking about producers. And then he handles two producers. And turned out to be the right call. Those guys are great. Paul Coldare and Sean Slade at Fort Apache in Cambridge, Mass. Did Belly. And they did that whole new, not new wave. That's the wrong term. Post-punk, Belly, Dinosaur Jr. They did all, you know, that whole world, right? So that was where Clockhammer, we were all about it. So... this is still going to Uncle Tupelo. We go up there to make the record. 14 days, you know, we're down. We're blowing it through. We're loving it. It's our last day. We're packing up all our shit. We're loading out. And a band is loading in. They pull up their beat blue van, or I think it was blue. Get out. It's the good boys from Uncle Tupelo. Jay, Jeff, and Mike. We say our hellos. No big deal. Just our howdy howdies. We leave.
Do you know them?
No, I don't know them. I'd heard their name.
Okay.
Didn't know a note of their music. Driving back to Nashville, Tennessee. Our lead singer, great guy, tells us he's hearing voices. Having a little mental issues.
During the drive?
Oh, yeah. During the drive home. After making this record.
Hold on. Is he driving?
Yeah, he was, a matter of fact. Because the bass player did that trick where he gets on the freeway and drives 40 miles an hour, and you're like... wait a minute, get back in the back. So all he does is bong hits and, you know,
right.
Writes letters to women. And I'm like, why does Matt never drive? Oh, that's why.
Writes letters.
So he played us. You know what I mean? He played us.
Takes bong hits and writes letters to women. Okay, great summation. Now hold on a second. Just to clarify, the guy driving the van is like, so I gotta tell you something.
Yeah.
I'm hearing voices.
Oh, it's straight out of a movie.
This is like out of Annie Hall.
Oh, yeah. You know, oh, God, I love Walken, that scene.
Right?
Sometimes when I'm driving at night, the slow pan from Woody to Christopher Walken, and it's raining.
I think of driving into the... I hear the crash.
That's it.
I picture the flames.
That's one of my favorite scenes. Christopher Walken.
That's what we're talking about here. Your singer is opening up about hearing voices.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we're driving back, so he's sort of like, I've got to... Wow. It's over. We get back, and it's over.
Look at all the bipolar and mental disorder, by the way.
That I seem to attract.
This episode's brought to you by BetterHelp.
Yes, exactly. What's the therapy online thing? Anyway.
I thought that was it. Yeah. How about and Paxil?
Paxil, that's good. Okay, so.
So.
Dig this. Apparently Uncle Tupelo, when they're driving back to Belleville, Mike the drummer says, I'm getting married and I'm going to work for the newspaper. So here we go. Here we go. So Uncle Tupelo's manager called Paul and Sean to say, you know, do you know any drummers? Paul and Sean found out from, it gets a little convoluted and interesting here, from the great Doug Shelmer at First Warning Records that Clockhammer was signed on, that this band had dissolved. So Paul and Sean recommended me. That's it. I drove to Belleville to audition. At that point, I weighed like 240 pounds and had dreadlocks like down to here. I mean, that was kind of scary looking. I was. So I go in there, I'm 6'5". So I go in there, and, you know, I bring my one snare drum I had in Clockhammer, because we were poor, this Noble & Cooley 4x12 solid that would just rip your head off, just like take it off. And it's in this little kind of apartment thing that they had, you know, pizza boxes stacked up in the corner to the ceiling. These guys were just, you know, that was it. Jay, Jeff, and I'm... they let me play on Mike's kit. I didn't bring a kit. So I set up and play, and I know I was louder than a tornado. So that night we go out to Cicero's, this famous club in St. Louis, and we party, and Tweety's like, you got it, man, you're in. This is great. I'm like, right on. I'm not going to be, you know, they're going to Europe soon. This is it, baby, I'm in. I go home, And then Jay decides I played too loud. So I was out. I was like, shit. So I didn't get it. 2 weeks go by. I don't know what happened with the drummer they got. But I'm sure he was quieter than I was. He didn't work out. And they're going to Europe in a week. And they call me. And I got it. And that was it. So I went up and started rehearsing. And then we went to Europe. I'd never been to Europe. And on our way to... We're going to Europe and we're going to the Netherlands. Because that's where Americana and alt country and that real kind of music does well. And where I live in Nashville, it's 112 degrees. I didn't pack anything long sleeve. I'm in shorts. That's who I was. We're on some kind of ocean. I don't know where the hell we are. On some ferry. It's 30 degrees. I'm freezing to death. Can't find any clothes at the stores because no one's big over there. I don't know.
I don't know
where that's going, but that was my life. And then, Tupelo was good, but Jay and Jeff, that was, everyone knows the story. That was going away. They were done with each other. Well, not Jeff, but Jay. Jay wanted to move on. And Jay, no matter what you say about Jay, Jay's always Jay. You know what I mean? You don't get a different Jay. He's quiet in interviews. He pisses people off because he won't speak. But Jay's funny when you get to know him.
When you say Jay wanted to move on, what does that even move on?
Jay was done with Jeff.
Okay.
It's in all these books.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they moved on, and then Jeff wanted to keep going, and he came to all of us and like, "You guys want to keep playing?" I was like, I got rent. I need to eat. I want to play." So that happened. Then Wilco went, and that ride was great. I got to do all the television shows, play great shows here and there, open up for big bands and big, we opened up for R.E.M. I didn't even know R.E.M. was a big thing in Europe at that time period, like in 1999. But they were selling out coliseums. And we played in Italy in this soccer coliseum for like 90,000 people. And that's surreal, It was us and, what's Damon Albarn's band? That band, not Gorillaz, pre-Gorillaz.
Blur.
It was us and Blur and R.E.M. It was great.
Yeah. I was so, timid. I was like, Blur. Blur.
Yeah, can I get it out? Yeah. So, that was that ride, and then,
But you were done?
Well, they told me I was done.
Yeah,
it's the running joke, David. It's the, why'd the drummer get fired from the band? Hey guys, I got a song. I wasn't trying to pitch a song. We were having the songwriting conversation. And I've signed NDAs and all that. It's been 100 years ago. So, lawyers get involved. It gets messy. But I'm very proud of everything I did with that. I got to see the world.
Lawyers get involved. It gets very messy.
It gets messy.
So we just leave it alone.
Yeah.
We have to.
But it's okay.
Yeah.
I don't have any ill will toward any of them.
Right.
Royalties, Seven Records, all is good.
Well, can I ask just one thing then at least? Does it come out of the blue or are you like, no, it was slow. It was a slow, you felt like this was coming.
No. Jeff and I never really, let's see, how do I say this? I don't do well with needy people.
There you go.
I don't.
There you
and
go.
He was, we had, man, we had a lot of laughs in the beginning. We'd all get in one hotel room, get baked, kick a hacky sack, eat a bunch of Cheetos, And then things change, when you're in a band for a while, I tell bands I work with, here's ADHD for you. I tell bands I work with what bands are still together after 20 years. Name me two bands.
ZZ Top and U2.
U2's one of them, and Los Lobos.
Oh, ZZ Top guy died. Los Lobos. There you go. It's a bigger band. That's better.
Think of why.
Why?
Because they split everything evenly. Mm. Nobody's trying to stay awake at 3 a.m. to get songwriting on a song, Because we all know songwriting and publishing is, that's it.
They don't pay Hidalgo more?
Pardon me?
They don't pay Hidalgo more? I'm joking.
I'm not answering that. No, I know them and I love them.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Well, the drummer is Bugs, right? He doesn't get it.
No.
You I'm talking about the original. Perez.
Cesar. Yeah.
Cesar. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you too. You know, that's. You don't see Adam and Larry run into the studio when the Edge and Bono are in there doing what they do at 5 a.m. They're at home. Mm. That's what I think, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
But
I know what you're saying. But neediness, yeah. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Who needs it?
You know, he was going through stuff. We all know he went through stuff.
I don't really,
He's supposed to be better.
Okay.
I wish everybody... Can't we all just get along? I've always been Switzerland in any situation. It's like, can't we all just...
But you've seen... But again, it keeps the recurring... It's like, this is the pattern, isn't it?
Yeah.
The
creative artist. Yeah. I mean, this is what it is, man.
Yeah.
But
do you feel like you like got around that somehow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I got around it in the sense that I feel like I was honest with everyone involved, and they may not like what I say all the time. But, you know, even if you write 50 songs a day, if you're that prolific, not all 50 are going to be great, are they?
No.
But tell a creative artist that is their entire identity, that song 37 and 39 weren't the best songs he's ever written.
Right.
It's sort of like that.
Right. Well, let's go back. I asked you, and we went off on a tangent about the drummers make great producers. What makes a great producer?
Being able to listen. Ideas, the whole nine yards. You don't know where the great ideas are going to come from. I may be sitting here with a band and the bass player's timid and he says, well, what about if we, and I was like, shit, let's try that. You know, you've got to be open-minded enough. I've been on records where the only person that was listened to was the lead guitarist and the lead singer.
Mm-hmm. But
like 100%.
But to back up, so you,
yeah.
That was a good example to me anyway. Like you heard that singer, songwriter, whatever he was,
right.
Guy, and you were drawn in. So let's use that as an example. Like you hear an artist and you're just pulled, right? We don't know why, right? We don't know why.
Exactly.
It's like you don't know why.
Well, it's also like if
I'm attracted to her and they're like, really? You've hurt? I don't know why.
If I like it this much, someone else will like it this much.
And then there's that.
Yeah.
When I know it's a good episode, I know it's...
100%.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, do you need a little bit of... I know what this person needs. At least it's, I don't know how to put it. Like you just know, like you can do something with it. So does there need to be some vision? And 2-part question: when you're putting a team together, doesn't that already kind of establish what direction you're going in?
Semi-sorta. You know, living in Nashville, there are incredible, incredible musicians like LA and New York. But I think so many of them gravitated here because of the cost of rent, which is now a non-issue because rent's through the roof. But there are great musicians here that can flip on a dime. But I tell any artist or band I'm working with, I'll try anything you want to try if you try what I want to try. So there's no hierarchy in the room. You know, I played on more records than most of the people I work with, but I don't demand my way. I'm here to try to get the best record out of you. I tell everyone I work with, I go out on that plank and say, if I don't make your best record, I fail. I love what I do. I take seriously what I do. So I want to pull that out of them, you know? And it's an open... This couch right here that you're sitting on, Dave, is called the trust tree. We can say anything here and it never leaves the room, man.
Right.
And you know, having artists cry while they're singing, all this stuff matters to me. I think it's important.
Yeah. No, I get that. But what I'm saying is, like, you still need some kind of a vision, yes or like, do you, or no?
Well, hopefully the artist has a vision. I can't pull an artist through their career.
Okay, so this is helping me. I like to understand this kind of thing. In other words, I often think of it as a producer can be sort of a director of sorts, like in a film.
Absolutely.
But in that instance,
or a psychiatrist.
Well, that too, like a barber or a bartender. I get that.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. But, in the film analogy, that director maybe finds a script, right, and then is like, oh, I have vision,
right,
for what the script.
Absolutely.
I didn't write it. But I know what how it should look.
Oh, yeah.
So I know the DP I'm hiring, and I know that I'm casting it. And
I always have an idea.
So the artist is their song, the band, but do you do that approach?
Those are suggestions. Those are ideas.
That you go in with this sort of somewhat of a preconceived.
Yeah, it's part of pre-production, which I love. A lot of producers don't do pre-production or don't like it. I love it. It's where we go through the songs and we try a thousand different things, or not a thousand. We try different things to try to get it to where we're both like, yes. You know, once you get that excitement going back and forth on songs, I'll have a band bring in some or an artist and they'll say, this is the chorus. And I'll be like, that's a great pre-chorus. Go write a chorus.
Hmm.
And they're sort of like, what? And I was like, no, listen, this sets up what could come next. Think about it.
Okay. So you don't go in with a very full.
No, but if someone sends me songs and they don't give me any ideas at all, like they're recommended from somebody and they send me stuff and I'm really into it, I can definitely, I mean, there's no way as a human being we can't have our own vision. You know, I'm not open slate so much that I'm like, tell me what to do. I'm not that guy. I'm not a guy that just turns on all the stuff and sits on the couch and says, tell me when you're done. Yeah, I can't. I'm too ADHD. I've got to be involved in, that's why I love making records, because I get to be involved in so much stuff. The technical side, which I know less of than anything, and all the other side. You know, the making the record, the melody, the idea of chord changes, the tempo, all of it. What if it didn't have real drums? What if we made a loop in the front? And then, you know, obvious stuff that people do, but you'll be surprised how many people are just blown away by the idea of like, oh, we're going to build this track instead of track it with a full band. Because I love to make records like that where half of it is the band, especially if it's a solo artist. I'll put a band together and we'll build the tracks. And by building the tracks, it leaves us a real open space to, you know, I got a guy in Turkey that plays Turkish instruments. That'd be cool on this, you know. It's the world, and especially after the pandemic, where remote recording is more accepted more than ever. You know, I didn't do that much before, but during the pandemic, I did a couple records where I never saw anybody. Think of that for a minute. And my job was to make it sound like we were all in the room. And I'm pretty proud of what I came out with, because that was not easy.
Yeah.
And the trick was, to me, and I work with these great musicians, man. I could name them. They're great. They play with people you know, from John Prine to Tedeschi, Trucks. You know, they're great musicians. And the main thing I had to tell them, because everyone has a home studio, or at least a mic pre, so they can record their instrument, bass, guitar, whatever it may be, to play less. And here, they will play less. But when they're at home, everyone feels like they need to do more to impress me or the artist, but they really don't. And I don't know what that is psychologically.
Yeah, I was going to say, what the hell is that?
I don't know what that is. I don't know if that's, this doesn't feel busy enough and I'm sitting at home in my NFL footy pajamas and I'm too comfortable. You know what I mean? I'm not there with someone saying, let's try it again or what. You know, I let them do their thing. If I didn't like it, I'd say, try something else. Yeah. Or I like that, but I don't like what you played in the bridge. That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So remote recordings really, and I played drums on a couple of things remotely. This artist from Switzerland that I really love. And I did drums for his stuff. And then I caught myself in sort of the same mindset as the musicians I hired that recorded remotely on records, in that I sent him like three different passes when he only wanted one.
Yeah,
I'm set up, I'm having fun. Yeah. What if I did this? What if I did that? Right. You know, that would be the mentality why you would do that.
That sounds reasonable also.
I think so.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, why not?
I mean, okay, all right, interesting.
So that's my producer head, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm always a drummer. Always a drummer.
You feel first and foremost?
First and foremost. Since I was 7 years old, I knew what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what that is. My wife asked me, how did you know? I was like, there was no plan B. I mean, I finished college because that was the deal I made with my parents.
So what did you major in?
Public speaking, I think. I swear to God. Speech. Speech and public speaking. At MTSU up the street.
What the hell was that?
I was the college weatherman. That's what I did.
What does that entail, though? Man, majoring in speech?
I made up the freaking weather sometimes because I was bored. You know, I don't know.
So, but, and that's interesting because I was just talking about that with someone, the idea of this is apparently the scariest thing people can do is public speak.
Yeah, that's you know, right. You know, isn't that funny?
And it doesn't scare the shit.
No, a student taught there my last year.
Yeah. I don't know. What is that?
No, I don't know. Well,
but
people would rather eat glass.
Do you want to jump out of a plane?
I fly gliders.
You fly gliders?
Yeah, been doing that for a while. I'm not current right now. My youngest brother is, but we went flying last week.
The thing, like, you're out there on a...
Oh, yeah. That's why I'm doing the yoke move that you can't see.
Yeah, he's using the hand.
Not hang glider, but a plane pulls you up, and you release. I've been doing... My dad is still alive and was a pilot, yeah.
I guess you're...
It's unbelievable. You're free. You're like a bird. There's no engine. It's great.
How the hell... You just steer it with your thing, with the hand?
No, it's just like... You still have to go to school and learn how to do it and everything. No, you have rudder pedals and a yoke and instruments and everything. A stick, yeah.
This is what you do?
Yeah, it's fun.
How the fuck do you even get into that?
There's a place about 45 minutes from here called Eagleville. A little grass strip that has a bunch of gliders, and you just rent a glider.
How dangerous is this?
It's not dangerous at all.
Not at all.
Not at all. Hang gliding is dangerous.
No, I'm...
This is not hang gliding where a spar can break and you... Doo, boom. No. No, these are gliders. And for every 45 feet you go forward, you drop a foot. Like 45 to 1 glide ratio or 32 to 1.
That sounds like math is involved.
Yeah. And I'm not good at math, so there you go.
You and me both.
That's why I made up the weather. Yeah.
Yeah. But there's not dangerous at all?
No, it's not dangerous.
Yeah, high up are you when you...
You... cut loose at like 1500 or 3000 feet, and then you look for thermals, and you have instruments that tell you where thermals are, and then you go like that.
See, I love the way he said it, like, it's got, you look for thermals,
you look
Dave.
For thermals.
Dave.
That's it. Some days are better than other.
Of course, thermals, of course. Of course.
That's it. I mean, you can't really, well, and you get to recognize
clouds. Because we all know what thermals are.
No, you can't see them. They're like flat bottom white clouds that have a lot of lift. And turbulence, and you can tell.
Yeah. Tell them large. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what any of this means.
That's it.
I'm not a pilot.
Oh,
I'm not
that,
a.
That's yeah. That's.
You grew up with this. Your
I don't know
dad's
how we got
pilot.
To that. Because well, for fun. Yeah.
Yeah, for fun. Fun. Yeah, yeah. 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 That's what you do.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Damn. All
right. Yeah,
I take
fun.
Your word. If it's not dangerous.
It's not dangerous at all.
You just really you not. Could not die doing this.
Well, if you really wanted to.
But... Right, but there's no malfunction that can happen.
Oh, no. Well, there's no engine to die. Huh. Sometimes you might have to land out in a field. You need to get good at that, but
shit could go wrong.
No, not wrong.
See, wrong. But the thing is, you're selling me on it now.
Well, there's even if there's no lift relative to outside the atmosphere. For every 42 feet you go forward, you drop 1 foot.
I hear what you're saying.
You got plenty of time to find a runway, or
do you?
But you fly smart. That's the whole thing. Power flying, people can do what are called touch and goes. You know, where you go in and you hit the power and you take off again. You don't get to do that in a glider. It's when you land, you land.
Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you don't really stall a glider very much. They have really long wings. The one I fly has, like, really long wings. And it's fiberglass and carbon fiber. And you sit in it with your feet kind of up and it's badass.
It sounds insane.
Oh, it's incredible.
How long are you up there for?
Varies. If there's no lift, 45 minutes. So not long. But if there's lift, you can stay up for 2, 3. Some people stay up like 4 or 5 hours. And out on the West Coast, where they just have lift coming off, like if you're in Arizona, you can stay up for like 8, 10 hours. No engine. Pretty amazing.
What?
And last week, we were looking for these hawks circling. We were following them up. Pretty cool. My brother got checked out. I got to get current, what they call current again.
How long does it take to get certified to do all this?
When I was 14, my mother used to drive me down. I couldn't drive a car. Used to drive me down there, and she was too nervous to watch. So she would just sit in the car and read a magazine while the instructor took me up.
Why was your mom nervous?
My mom was nervous.
But why was
she? Well, there's a train coming in. Let me turn the train up. Thought the train was on. She was, because her 14-year-old son was in a plane with no engine, probably.
But you said there's nothing in your dad.
Yeah, but...
See, that's why I'm... See what I'm doing there?
My mom...
But your mom married to a pilot, she should have known better. So why...
My mom didn't like
so
my
So why was she nervous?
My mom didn't like my
you're
dad.
You're lying to me, Ken Coomer.
My mom did not like my
Ken
dad.
Ken Coomer, you're lying to me.
It's true.
It's not safe.
I want you to go take a... Where do you live now?
I live in Austin, Texas.
I thought you were in L.A.
I know everyone thinks that. They don't know that I
When did you move to Austin?
In November 21.
Any reason why?
Many reasons why.
Okay, we'll get into that in another
Many
podcast.
Many reasons why. Do you have a podcast?
No, I will tomorrow, apparently. You should go up in a glider. I know there's a place in Austin. I kid you not.
I kind of want
would
to now.
Love
I've never even heard of this.
Really?
Never.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding. I miss a lot of things, apparently. Well, why would I know about this? My dad apparently was a pilot.
Well, here's something
a long
to come
time
out.
Ago. That's a whole thing. I can't even picture him doing it.
Wow.
Yes, wow.
Wow.
He'll be 89 in a couple days.
My dad's 85.
See what I mean?
Still going. Plays bluegrass. Bing, ding, 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 ding.
Oh, your dad plays. Okay.
All right. So, I grew up. My dad had a band with Pat Boone. Pat Boone, Debbie Boone, baby. Don't think I think of that when people say that.
Hells yeah.
My dad had a band with Pat Boone. They had a duo. They had a record deal. He was on the Ryman long before I ever was. And they had a radio show. And Colonel Tom Parker came to see his band. This is the story my father tells every Thanksgiving. It's fabulous. And Colonel Tom said... You guys are good, but I'm gonna pass. I'm gonna go with this kid I found in Memphis. Yeah. That's my dad's life.
Wow.
Yeah. So I grew up with guitars.
I'm gonna take my luck with this kid from me.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try my luck.
Yeah, it turned out well.
The Colonel.
So then Pat blamed my dad, and my dad blamed Pat. So the band broke up.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Interesting.
Yeah. But my dad, when he was, and not that this is a podcast about my father, but when he was 14, they used to sneak him into the Ryman to see Hank Williams play.
So he's got stories.
Oh, yeah, he's got stories.
Did he ever get to talk to Hank or anything like that?
He used to wink at him, I think, because he was a kid.
Damn.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
Now, hold on a second. Speaking of, you probably know, I jump around, talk about ADHD. You, you work with Shaver?
Yeah. Man, when I met him, he walked in.
Billy Joe.
Yeah.
Billy Joe Shaver.
He's a big guy. Was a big guy. He walked in and hugged me, and you could feel the missing finger, like, around you as he hugged me. And I was just like, holy mother of... Yeah. He was a saint. That's the last record that they did with his son, Eddie. Eddie and him had a...
Very tumultuous.
Look at our age group. Uh-huh. Tumultuous relationship, and it came through on that record.
Really?
If I ever talked to my father like that, it would be lights out.
Oh.
Yeah. I've never...
He was young punk.
Yeah, he was angry.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like to hear that he talked to his dad. I mean, whatever. I mean, even if your dad's Billy Joe Shaver.
They're both gone, you know? They're both no longer
that's
with
a different,
us.
Well, but the kid went first.
Kid went first.
Did you know was he using at that point?
I couldn't tell, but man, he was mad.
When you knew later, did you look back and go, yeah, that makes sense. That's probably what he was doing?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if it was that, because it didn't feel like, well, definitely something was going on. I couldn't tell.
You knew he was troubled.
Oh, he was troubled.
Yeah, but I mean, let's be real. I mean, even if Billy Joe was sweet to you and all that.
Oh, he was. To everybody.
Was he? Yeah, but it's also believable he wasn't the best dad.
No, without a doubt. On the road, had his things.
You know what I mean? It's Billy Joe Shaver.
Billy Joe Shaver, the legend is the legend.
Is it how do you want it or where do you want it?
That's it. That's it.
What did he say again?
You know the story?
But tell him. You tell him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. For the uninitiated. Paraphrasing. Some guy cornered him in a bathroom or something.
In a bar, right?
Yeah, in a bar, and I think he said, how do you want it? Yeah. And was it a knife or a gun?
It was a gun. He shot him, I believe.
Yeah, he did shoot him.
He shot the guy.
Yeah, he shot the guy.
It's Billy Joe Shaver, folks.
out to shoot people. Nicest guy, one of the nicest guys I ever met.
Right.
And while his son is going off, Billy's saying, I love you, Eddie. I love you. And it was just heart-wrenching, man. It's heart-wrenching.
The kid's going off on dad and he's...
I'm talking about while we're all in booths playing this great record, and that's going on.
The kid is shouting at dad, and he's just, his response is, I love you.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it'll rip your heart out.
Oh.
That's a father apologizing to his son that I haven't been a good dad, is what it felt like.
Yeah.
It's heavy, man. It's heavy.
Oh,
heavy.
Oh.
Yeah, we're all just kind of not, you know, like, you know, head down. Okay, let's try it again, you know.
This is literally one of the heaviest things you've ever done, then, as far as a producer.
Oh, I wasn't producing that. I was drumming on that. Ray Kennedy was the producer.
How did you get that gig?
I played on some Steve Earle stuff, and Ray called me back for that.
Okay. Gotcha.
I played on, a couple tracks on Jerusalem, and then did a movie thing with Steve, and then got called back for that.
What was that like, working with Steve Earle?
Steve's great. Yeah. Steve's great. Steve Earle, you know, it's like him and Ray's stories, you know, it's pretty great.
What? What do you mean him and
just,
Ray?
They're a great team to work together because, you know, Steve with Ray, Ray's a world-class engineer producer, 100%. He did Lucinda's Gravel Road, you know, I mean, Ray is the shit, knows his shit, and Steve... It's Steve's show, like anybody. You know, he's the leader. It's his show when he and Ray are together. So Ray's doing his gig and doing it well, but, you know, we would do a lot of talking before we track, let's put it that way. Mm. And the takes we used weren't what, personally, I thought were the best takes. They were the best vocals. And I respect that now. As a drummer back then, I was like, that other take was, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, that other take was much better. Why are we doing it again? You know, but that doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
The vocal really is what matters, if you think about it, so.
Mm-hmm. Would you work in another studio?
Yeah, I do sometimes. I mean, well, it's been a long time. So like, the first session I ever did, look, man, I grew up here, where... everything was going on. It might not have been to my cup of tea, but the first time I was ever in a studio was Sound Emporium. Have you been in Sound Emporium? It's a classic 60s studio owned by Jack Clement. The first session I ever did was in the A room in some new wave band I was in, and the engineer was a fan of ours, so of course we went in at midnight till 7 a.m., something like that, and when I listen back to it now, I am playing it so fast. Like, I can't believe someone went, whoa, 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 whoa. What are we doing here? This is like 25 beats too fast, you know? I listen back to it and we are flying. And it's because I have walked into this big A room and I'm as nervous as I can be.
Yeah.
And that's a fact, man.
Yeah.
You know, everyone always says I'm a behind the beat drummer, and I am. I think it's the way you walk and your heartbeat and all that crap. But on that session, I was sober as I could be, and I was playing so fast.
Hmm.
But after that, I was bit, man. I was like, yeah. Right. Like I say, it's always been the balance of live and studio.
But, I mean, again, having this place, if somebody wants you to produce, and they're like, you know, I really want to work. I'm making this up. They want to go they want to go to Miami.
Let's go.
I'm asking.
Criteria.
You're down.
Oh, in a minute.
Yeah.
In a minute.
Yeah, okay.
So I work with this great producer in Memphis a lot. You know, the funny thing is, when you become a producer, like when you say, I'm a producer, which is kind of funny to say still to me. You know, it's like,
well, it's very Hollywood.
I'm an actor.
Right.
It's like, oh, it is very Hollywood.
Right, because everyone says that in Hollywood.
Yeah, of course. Or I'm working on a screenplay.
Right.
But the funny thing is, when you become a producer and you're a drummer, many of the producers that used to hire me will not call me anymore.
Right.
That's just a fact. But I wish they knew that I get more joy out of going in and just playing on stuff and not having any of the headache of all the other stuff. You know, producing, lining stuff up. Just to show up and be the drummer and then I'm the guy sitting on the couch. looking at Wordle, you know, I mean, that kind of thing, you know what I mean? So there's a young producer in Memphis who I adore, who brings me in on everything. I mean, that's how I got to work with Al Green, was through this guy, you know? And he is good. He learned at Sun Studios when he was 15. His name's Matt Rossbang. I gotta give him a plug because I think he's that good. And then he worked at Sam Phillips forever, and now he has his own place called Southern Ground. But Southern Cruise. He's amazing because you don't realize he's doing anything. You know, those are the cats. You know the guys like drummers where you're like, he's not really doing anything. Wow, that sounds unbelievable. He's that. Like, he can laugh and hang out, and everything sounds incredible. So, he's a producer at Still Hired. Ray hires me. And, you know, not feelings hurt, butt hurt, or anything like that. It's just, it's a fact. It was a wake-up call for me a little bit. Like, oh, I'm not getting the call from these people anymore because now I do this. I really think it is a misunderstanding that they think, you know your hat. Like, I won't. You know, I won't play my role.
Hmm.
Not a diss, not a complaint. It's just...
Yeah.
An ADHD observation. That's what we'll call it, Dave.
I like that, Ken. I really like that, actually. Are you getting less calls these days in general? Would you say?
From those producers, I am.
But I know, but I didn't know if that means, like, in total. That means, like...
No, man, this has always been... I had a manager for a split minute when I first started doing this. And I literally had a guy who was vice president at Warner Brothers in L.A. call me and say, why are you working with this douchebag when you're this nice guy? This is the first guy. And he told me, he said, fire him. And I did. Come to find out, he was in there screaming about things.
The manager was acting like a fucking asshole.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, dude, we want to work with you because that's dealing with you.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
So I got rid of that. So it's all word of mouth. I have two people that find me artists and bands because I don't have time to look for that. Like right now, I'm supposed to be doing a record for 3 weeks solid. And the only reason I'm open now is she got black mold in her lung. And I laughed about that. Please edit that out. Edit out that laughter. Just go in there, take the edit tool. Dave, you can do it. Pro Tools, edit tool.
But the thing is, I like this part.
Yeah.
See, do you see what I'm saying?
I feel terrible for
it. Now I like the part where you're like, hey, Dave, go in there, the edit tool. See, that needs to have a reason to be there.
Yeah.
So
you have that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
I get it.
So I've been doing this great record. She's like a young Joni Mitchell. She's amazing. 23 years old, moved here, and she rented this duplex and she got black mold. Come to find out, they brought in the mold mitigation. They found all this mold. Yeah. So she's living in a hotel and we had to scrap this record till the fall. So
I just read about this. Wasn't that Tori Spelling, I believe?
I didn't know that.
Moved into a motel over mold. I didn't know if you were working with Tori Spelling. That's all. I didn't know.
Aaron's on his way. There's a reference for you.
He knows his shit, folks. That's what I mean. He knows his reference. I can tell. Yeah. You're as sick as they come. I get it, though. But he's fun. You're fun. You're fun on the tour bus.
Just fun.
You're fun.
I was the guy that had all the videotapes of all the outtake of commercials, and I still have that stuff. But it's on VHS. Who cares?
Right.
You know the ones with Orson Welles and doing the wine stuff.
I've played the entire Frozen Peas.
Oh, no, you have not.
On this podcast. Absolutely.
Oh, I didn't.
The right rating is the one I'm giving you.
Oh, my.
Spent 20 more times than... people are such a pest.
Yeah. Oh, my God, Gene. And, of course, the first one we ever heard was what? Buddy Rich. I mean, I know how your podcast starts.
Well, we got that, and of course, and then, but I mean, yeah, Buddy Rich.
But have you heard the Colonel Sanders one?
No.
Where he's doing the chicken commercials?
Actually, I have no. But I do. I love the Casey Kasem.
Yeah, that's a classic. That's a classic.
And there's another one too. What's the other singer? The guy. I'm not there. It's me. What's the guy?
He turned into a Vegas guy. Yes. Had the bad sort
Frankie
of
Valli, right?
No. Not Frankie Valli. Starts with an A.
No. It's the guy who wrote My Way, isn't it?
Yes. Not.
Paul Anka.
Paul Anka, that's it. That's it.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
The guy, Don, get Don on the phone. The guys need shirts. Don, Can someone get Don on the phone? It's genius, man.
That's the one.
See, that's comedy gold.
Gold. Yeah. Yeah.
Man, if you're not laughing, get out.
No, I know. Because, again, he's back to that, the mental illnesses and all that. It's like, I feel bad for you. But, like, you don't want to be around it.
No. I mean...
Do you play?
I don't work with assholes.
Well, that's the thing. How do you... Let's talk about for a minute. How do you learn... You must have come to a way to screen that out because you dealt with it and you put the time in, right?
I think so. Yeah.
You hire Charlie Drayton, you do all those things, and then bust because he's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And
he's got the problems.
He blew it.
Oh, you could say
it's Copland. You blew it.
Oh, man. As far as blowing it, that's probably poster child. Yeah.
So, how do you now, what are the tells?
We have a lot of conversations. You know, and everyone has issues and problems and this and that, but I think they figure out who I am coming to them, and I think they get the fact that, you know, I'm going to work with them. If we have problems, anytime you're making a record, somewhere in the process, there's going to be day 5, 6, 7, 13, where things get a little, we're not meshing today. You know what I mean? And at that point, it's how does that artist and or band handle that? You know, how do they handle it when it comes to that? 9 times out of 10, I'll be like, let's end early today. We'll come back tomorrow. You know, and I always stress while we're making a record, as long as we have conversation, as long as we're communicating, once we stop communicating, then there's going to be problems. There is. Then you get in your head, oh, he didn't listen to me, told him, you know, that kind of thing. And I try to keep it like this real open door policy. I want to try things an artist wants to try. It's important.
Yeah.
It's their baby.
Yeah.
And I work with a lot of young bands, and, you know, I shop bands too, and I've gotten several bands deals. A lot of bands don't get deals. That's just, who knows? That talking about a crapshoot. But, you know, when I have the ones where, and like we said earlier, if I love this, somebody's going to love this. This guy's voice, his lyrics, you know, it's that kind of thing. You just got to believe in it. I don't understand how people, and this isn't being judgmental, I promise, I don't understand how someone works with a band that they don't like. It is so personal. If it's just for the money, take the money, but man, you're not doing your best work. You're doing them a disservice. I don't get that. And I can't even name a band. Like, if you told me, I don't even know what that band would be. I don't know. Maybe a Norwegian black death metal band. They came to me and said, you're the guy. Here's a bucket of money. I don't think I'd do it. I really don't think I could do it. You know, not being holier than thou. It's just... I don't see how people work on records they hate. I know people that do it all the time.
You do?
Yeah, I know people that play on records they hate because that's how they pay their mortgage and stuff.
Okay, that we understand. I mean, we
and then but they'll call me up and, you got anything I'm playing on? You know, and these are big cats that play on Music Row, but they're just...
Yeah, but they hate country.
Yeah, and their soul is sucked out.
But am I right?
They hate the modern bro country. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. That's not what they listen to.
No.
Do you like country?
I like some country. It's all right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I like good songs. I like good artists. You know, it's that kind
of thing. Do you like where a lot of it's going?
No, of course not. Okay. Well, not necessarily true. You know, Chris Stapleton could sing The Phone Book. I mean, I'm in on that. And I like some of the newer... I don't listen to country. I mean, I don't...
What are you listening to?
I listen to all kinds of things. I really like that band Idols. I don't know if you know them. From the UK, and their last record they did with this guy named Kenny Beat as a producer, and he's a hip-hop guy. And I think that record's I like interesting records. I like records that go somewhere sonically, and he did a great job on that. Check it out. Not that I need to give Idols a plug, but... Yeah, I really like that. But I listen to so much music down here. I don't listen to a lot of stuff. In the house, I have like 5 or 6 jazz records I'll play. Like, Miles Davis, you know, the, what's it called? Kind of Blue, I'll listen to that. Or, what was I listening to the other day? It was pretty amazing. McCoy Tyner. Mm. I bought a bunch of, I have a man cave in the house. Like, I need a man cave.
Yeah, I was going to say, wow.
In the basement.
Amazing.
Because I have 3,000 plus CDs and, you know, 5,000 vinyl. I don't, again, it's, it, if you don't get rid of stuff, you're sort of a hoarder. I don't think I'm a hoarder until it comes to the music thing. My wife and I watched that Japanese show where you go through and you touch something and does it bring you joy? Yeah. You know, and that was great till we got to the man cave.
Right, right.
What about this CD? It's on Spotify. You get rid of it. I said, that's a first pressing,
right.
You know, this, the, you know, vinyl. So she gave up on that.
That's got Papa John Creech on it.
I cannot. That's it.
I cannot.
So I was like, Buddy Carlos, sign this. We're not getting rid of that. So I kept all that.
Right.
That's my man cave. And it's in there. And it's got an old 70s tube Marantz with some Klipsch floor speakers. And I've got burlap on the top I stapled in. It sounds... Look, I can come down here and listen on these Westlakes, these gigantic monitors, but sometimes I go in the man cave and listen because why not, you know? It sounds great in there. I do a lot of work in there.
In the man cave?
Yes.
Listening back?
Yes. Because when I'm doing, I mix only because sometimes budget allows that I mix, or because of a budget I have to mix, and I like mixing. But I'm not a super mixer. Like, right now I'm working with the amazing Chad Blake on a record. And he's in Wales, and he did all the Black Keys stuff.
I was going to say, he did Chad with a T in there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he did...
he's my favorite.
Los Lobos.
Absolutely. That. He did Colossal Head, which
that's
sonically... I go back to that all the time.
Yeah, the one I kept...
I go back to that all
the time. The other day, I was calling it Machine Head, okay? Good luck. And they were like, you mean Colossal Head? Yes! Yes!
You got corrected on that. I love
Machine
that.
Head.
Yeah.
Okay, good luck, pal.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, that was John Paterno worked on with him. I don't know if you know John Paterno.
I know that name.
He was on the show. Well, anyway, so yeah, Chad Blake. That's interesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's why you also like Pete Thomas.
Yes. I didn't know... Embarrassing moment. Wilco's out with Los Lobos, and I pull the drummer Victor, who used to be with him. Super nice guy. I pulled him aside and said, "You're playing on Colossal Head," and he just sort of looked down at the ground.
Yeah.
I didn't play on Colossal Head. He's like, "Man, I'm looking forward to your show tonight." You know, I'm just trying to cover my tracks because I had blown it.
Well, you know,
I had blown it, and it was Pete.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Pete Thomas. It's fucking... I know.
I called him when I was in L.A. We were supposed to go, and he ghosted me. So Pete, you ghosted me!
You've never gotten to work with him?
With Pete? No. Yeah, okay. Tried to work on okay. with him on my first record.
And Jordan's still on the list of, like...
Who doesn't love Steve? Have you interviewed Steve for your podcast?
No, hell no.
Why not?
Because how do you get... how do you get to him? You have his
I
number?
I don't remember how I got to him,
do you have
but
a number?
I did.
You have a number?
Oh, yeah, I have a number.
Maybe we could talk.
I doubt I have a number that's good anymore.
You see what I mean?
2006.
See what I mean?
And now Steve is.
So he's a Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. How do you get to it? That's what I'm saying.
How do you get to that?
I don't know.
Wow.
Like someone will say, like, "Hey, you should get Tommy Lee." It's like, right. How do you get to right, a Tommy right. Lee? You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
There's a level.
Yeah. You'd almost have to like subpoena him or something like.
Thank
the,
you.
The Manila envelope, like Tommy Lee, you've been subpoenaed.
Thank you, thank you.
He would probably laugh at that.
I don't think he'd find that funny.
I think he'd...
No.
After he opened it up?
No. And there's a, "Hi, I'm the audience at that part." He'd be like, "Fuck you fucking..."
Yeah, get out of here.
But you know what I mean? There's a level. It's like, you know, and Travis Barker's a Kardashian now. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So it's like one thing to say, like, you should have him. But
right,
it's like,
right.
But he's a Kardashian. You don't just...
No, I don't think you just
find
him
now. No, not now.
No.
Because he's a whole thing now, you see, with all that, you know?
Yeah, he married a Kardashian, that's
well, I'm saying, to me, he is a Kardashian now.
I guess so.
He's in that. The way, like, Kanye was, like, he's just in all that.
Wow.
It's a different zone. It's a different level. You don't
just... Yeah, no, it's true.
Yeah. You don't come to Las Vegas and talk to a man like Mo Green like that.
Yeah, that's it.
You know?
Can someone get Don on the phone? Yeah, exactly.
Wait a minute. Here's the thing, though, I was going to get to, is that can it all be destroyed in mixing?
It can all be destroyed in mastering, that's for sure.
I mean, can't the artist all of a sudden flip out all the way? You get through all the work, everything.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're like, I can't stand the way this sounds.
Oh, my God. Yeah, of course.
Like, I loved the sounds we were getting.
Oh, we've had that happen.
Yeah?
We've had that happen. And, you know, the first time it happened, I freaked out. The second time it happened, I was like, okay, we're going to go back to where we were. And we did. Like I had the fancy mixer mix this record. And they came to me and said, it doesn't sound like what we had in there. And I said, well, that's molecules moving in there. Y'all got all hippie on them. It's molecules moving there, and that'd be the same. It's like a photograph in time, gentlemen. But I went back to the tracks, and they were right. So I just sort of did my mixing on it, and they loved it. But Mr. Fancy Mixer got paid and, you know, didn't.
So this is, right? This is a thing.
Oh, that can happen. Oh, yeah. I mean, who's to say what's right? There are kids, I'm talking like a grandpa, there are kids that are on SoundCloud in New York making records on iPhones that sound amazing. Like playing a drum kit, putting the iPhone on the floor tom, so you get this natural compression. It's badass. I got a friend in New York that sends me like a list of these all the time. And they're only like a minute, 25 seconds long. I'm like, what is this? Like, yeah, and then they, you know, they're doing it all on their phone by using GarageBand. It's the future, man. You can hang on or you can be a dinosaur. That's kind of what it is.
Are you doing that?
No, hell no, I don't do that. Nor am I a dinosaur. I make beats, baby. Come on.
I was gonna say, but yeah.
No,
yeah.
No. And that's that beautiful thing of limitation. You know, limitation brings out creativity. I'm not limited in here. Sometimes I feel like I need to go in the man cave with a drum machine and a speaker, one speaker, like the awful tones behind me, and just make beats. Not in here with all the fancy stuff, but just limitation builds creativity, I think. Like, early on, there were all these rappers that had nothing but an MPC. Nothing but an MPC. Like, you know what I'm talking about? The drum machine, be it the SP-1200 or the 2000, 2000XL. And they would do everything on this because they didn't have a studio. You know, especially back when studios were $1,500, $2,000 a day. They had that. And they made records. A friend of mine at the Village worked with Dr. Dre. And this is early on. Said Dr. Dre brought in, and I wasn't there, so I'm telling his story, brought in his MPC, and this is on an SSL console, probably 90 channels or some god-awfulness. Asked for two lines out, everything's on the MPC, and ran it through the pre's through the speaker. No mixing, no editing, no nothing. It's all in the magic box, baby. I was just like, that story blew me away. And it reminded me that limitations are good. They're not bad.
And by the way, you don't think he knows that. That's just what he did know.
That's what he did know.
Yeah, right.
That's exactly right.
Uh-huh.
Of course, a man can buy and sell any of us now. But
the point
even
is,
even then, at that time, he could have.
Well, a lot of this applies to everything in life. We talk about that, too. The idea of, like, ignorance is good. So it's even the kid who's like, well, I just packed up my bags and moved to Nashville.
Right.
And it's like, if you were a little older, a little wiser, you'd be like, are you out of your effing mind?
100%. I got a college degree. Didn't do anything with that. Nothing with it. I think I was a sales rep at a screen printing place while I was playing in punk bands. You know? I was never going to use that. It's that same thing that you know, I feel so lucky that at 6, 7 years old, I was like, I'm going to be a drummer. Just play drums with my dad while he would play, had my little drum. But my dad would never buy me a drum set. Had to get a job. Mm. And I think that's good, too.
Yeah.
You know, he wouldn't buy me a kit. So I went and worked at the local burger place. I bought it from Forks. Drum closet. Wow. When it was a closet.
Wow.
See, people don't realize, you know, now it's just called Forks. Or maybe it's still called...
No, I remember the closet part, but I'm not from
here. It was a tiny little, like this big, on the backside of a music store. Gary Forkum.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was just a few kits in there? Like,
No. I mean, they just cram everything they could in there. There was stuff in there. But I bought this Ludwig Sky Blue 5-piece kit, and it was $250. And I worked my ass off at this burger place in the back, flipping burgers and stuff. And I bought it, and that was it, man. That's my pride and joy.
Damn.
But later, I got tired of that color. You get a little older, it's like sky blue. That's not very AC/DC rock and roll.
Right.
Recovered it in black.
Yeah.
I remember my dad coming home. He's a CPA by now. He's coming home with the briefcase. I'm in there with a contact paper, and he looked at me and said, "Son, someday you're going to regret this." And he was right. I recovered them, then I sold them.
Wow.
Yeah, I used them for a while. I'd give anything to find that kit.
Yeah.
You know, your first set. I sold my first set.
Yeah.
It's pretty lame.
Yeah.
Pretty lame.
You're the ones that got away.
Yeah.
But it's, I like letting go, though. I'm torn.
Are you good at letting go? When you moved from L.A. to Austin, did you let go?
A lot.
Yeah, that's good.
And I like not being precious about gear. I don't want to ever be too much like, no, but not this, you know.
Right.
Even though I do have that.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily like it. I don't like being attached to things.
No.
Objects.
No. I told you I was good until we got to the man cave.
That's, well, and all this.
Clothes and
all
that.
This. You can't, yeah, this doesn't count.
No.
It doesn't count.
No.
This is your work.
Yeah, this is what I do.
Do you practice drums?
What's that?
Be serious. I like your honor. Be honest. I love it.
I'll go in there and play for 30 minutes and then go, I played that yesterday. Damn. Then I'll pick up a bass and I'll be like, I like that melody. So I don't practice like I used to. No.
So you sit down once in a while and just kind of play?
I'll sit down probably. No, if I'm in here and no one's here, I'll go in there and play for 30 minutes to an hour. Try some things.
Uh-huh.
You know, not reading any books or anything, but I'll try some things, set up some different stuff. Mm-hmm. I play open-handed because the guy that taught me how to play was my band director, and he wasn't a drummer, and he hated drummers anyway. So there was a drum kit, and he's like, I don't know, try this. So that's why I play open-handed. I can do both, but I play leading with the left.
Yeah.
Because Mr. Band Director, Mr. Wetzel, didn't know any better. And that turned out to be the greatest thing ever. So.
What do you mean? Why?
Because I can lead with either hand. And that's a real freedom around a drum kit. It's pretty great.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
So I have my ride over here.
Okay.
My ride's over here.
Yeah, he's doing left-hand ride.
And a forward thumb over here. Yeah.
Yeah, open hand. And that was a very Austin, Texas thing, I noticed.
Oh, was it?
It seems like a lot of the older guys.
Oh, yeah. Doyle Braun?
They're like shuffling. No, actually, I don't think so. That's a good question. No, but I think George Raines could do the...
Oh, wow. He was great.
The open.
Yeah.
You know George Raines?
Were you a fan of Frosty?
Fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
You seen him?
The Lee Michaels stuff?
Oh, of course.
I saw him once.
Yeah, the
Lee. Playing at that little...
Continental Club?
No, not the Continental Club, but one of my best friends is in Austin. He's a drummer. That shop that has like clothes and car hot rod stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's right down from the Continental. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I saw him playing there one time and I was just like, Frosty.
Who's your drummer friend?
Tom Lewis.
Okay.
Tall Tom, 6'7".
Wow.
He played in the Wagoneers. He played with, I never remember his name. Played the Get Fiddle.
Oh yeah, a Junior Brown.
Yes! For the win!
Yeah.
Ding ding. Yeah. He played with Junior. That's where I met him, playing on the West Virginia public radio show that everyone at Mountain Stage.
Interesting.
Tall Tom was there playing just a snare drum, and we bonded. And he just moved away from Nashville because he lived there for a while. But we talked today. Really good friends.
Cool. Oh, well, tell him I said.
I will.
If he's in Austin, especially.
We should hook up with him.
We should go get some Torchy's Tacos. This episode is brought to you by Torchy's Tacos.
I love this.
Take a minute and have Baja Shrimp.
Ooh.
Yeah.
He took me. Man, he's taking me to places down there that are just hole in the walls you never heard of.
Oh, yeah.
No
yeah.
name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I like the Mexican Tex-Mex places
yes.
and stuff like that. Yeah.
The breakfast tacos
Hell's
down there.
Hell's yeah.
Why Austin? Why move to Austin and not Nashville, New York? Well, I know why not New York, but...
I can't really answer the why not Nashville. I mean, I could. I was here like 10 years ago or something.
Really?
Yeah.
For how long?
Not that long, but I also came, I did on purpose, I showed up in the winter. I didn't like the winter. I know it sounds, yeah.
Because it's a real winter?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Because I'm from New York, and I don't like that. I don't like those winters, you know what I'm saying? I always grew up going, like, why do we do this?
I spent a lot of time in Chicago in the wintertime.
Yeah.
And I was like, you can have all this.
Yeah. And then L.A. will really spoil you.
My wife was in L.A. for 14 years.
Yeah, that'll just spoil it. That just softens you. Then all of a sudden, you're like, Christmas Day, you're like, oh, look, I'm in shorts.
You know? Right, right. No, I like seasons, though. I do.
I know. Most normal people like seasons. Yeah, I like seasons. I know.
But.
I know.
It's true.
But I want. I don't know. I might have to get into the gliding thing.
Was Come it, on, do
was
it. It
not, was, it's called gliding.
Yeah, soaring.
Soaring.
Gliding.
God damn it.
Soaring Society of America. That's the organization that sort of oversees.
That's everything. The message board I'd get on and stuff. Like, are you on like gliding message boards and?
No.
You don't do any of that?
Too geeky, man.
You don't listen to. There's no gliding podcasts.
I've listened to one, but I got bored to tears.
Because the host sucked, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
See?
Because he's not a public speaker like. Like you, yeah.
Damn it. I didn't even get a major in it.
You should have.
It's too late. We
it
sold...
It is never...
I guess not. I guess you're right.
I don't want to go back to school and get anything.
Do you miss touring?
If I have some friends... You know, you make a lot of friends when you tour a lot, and they're still out there. So if I go get on their bus before they play, and, you know, and then smell the diesel and all, it gets pretty... exciting, but I'm the first person my son sees every morning. I have an 11-year-old, and my wife's not a morning person at all. I'm the guy that gets up, makes the breakfast, we hang out, and I take him to the bus so he can go to school. I'd miss that hard. Mm-hmm. You know, and my whole deal was like, I was not the greatest guy on the road. I wasn't married, but I wasn't the greatest guy being honest in relationships while living on the road for that many years. I never got married till I got out.
You were checking out the talent and writing letters.
That's it, writing letters in the back of the van. Uh-huh. Like the bass player that wouldn't drive.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I miss the road? I do miss the road. If I could go out, you know, like weekends, or not even weekends, if I went out 2 weeks to sub for somebody, right on, let's go. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
That would be a blast.
I know. It's such all the ideal scenarios.
Oh, it has to be. If you fly me first class. No, it's not that.
If it could be 2 weeks. If it could be preferably during the summer.
Right. We need catering.
Right, right.
I got to make sure.
Right. Yeah. I like sushi.
Yeah, I love sushi. Only in the West Coast. That's where we do it.
I want my own bus.
Yeah. I want my own butt. I bet people
fuck
say
yeah,
that.
Dude. Oh, fuck yeah, dude. Come on. Let's. I mean, you know,
they don't say that. People do say that, don't they?
I mean, some people just get their own bus. That's just the deal. So, no, I'm not talking about Sidemen, of course. I don't mean that. Unless you're Steve Jordan, I guess. I don't know.
Who's the most precious drummer you've interviewed? You're not going to say it, of course.
Ooh, most precious.
You know what I mean. Like,
I want you to define that a little more for me, just because.
That. I want my own bus. I deserve.
Yeah.
It has to exist.
I know, I have to think about it.
I mean, there are egos in what we do. I feel very...
Drummer, you're being very specific.
Yeah, I'm being specific.
I have to think about that one. Who is the most... like, okay.
Well, you know what I mean.
Hold your little hand.
Precious. Yeah.
Your special little request.
Right, right, exactly. Greg Morrow. Don't come get your tape machine, Greg. It's in good hands. Good.
Totally. It's like, it's such a Victor and Drizzo move. It's such a, you know... I could just say Brendan Buckley to go with the comedy. You know, like, he's just, you know, just to...
Man, so what's the magazine that Jonathan Mover has?
It's Mover.
Is it Mover?
It is Mover.
All right, thank you.
That's fine, yeah.
All right,
I kind of like Mover, though. Let's go with that, Mover.
It's spelled...
Mover.
Okay.
No, because you think it can't be, right? With a name.
That's
with
what I name. Thought. Yeah, it can't
be Mover.
So there's an issue he puts out, that magazine, where they different drummers list all their snare drums. Have you seen those?
No.
I have two of those issues. And no. Brendan Buckley's snare drum collection is bananas. We haven't met, he and I, but his snare drum collection is bananas.
Yeah.
JR's in there. It's the list. And so they were looking for others, so I've submitted to Jonathan Mover, and I sent this, like, I got, was it Lemmy? I don't remember who did it. Someone took a picture of all my snare drums. I got some cool, weird, rare snare drums, whatever. Because no one gave a shit about drums when I was on the road. They all bought guitars, so you can buy drums. So I sent all this in. I never heard a peep. I thought that was funny.
Love it. Yeah.
I do have some cool drums.
I seen them. I don't know why I had to do it that like that, but
I don't know.
Well, I just
is
saw
that Southern bashing.
I know.
You can't do that. You live in Austin.
I can't get away with it. But they love it. They love the Yankee.
Oh yeah,
they do. No, they get a kick out of it because I'll just say something and they're cracking up and they go, "I'll be like, what are you gonna do?" And they're like, "What are you gonna do?"
Okay, so when I was in Chicago all the time in the Wilco days, I used to go down to the Polish district, walking in this pierogi place. I'm serious. This Polish family, they would have me say things and they'd give me free pierogies like a damn dog. I would say, "Hey, how y'all doing today?" I'd turn it on. Uh-huh. And they would just give me like a box of pierogies and laugh, and I'd be like, "I'll see you next week."
That's it. That's what I'm talking about. Hey, Dave, give us some New York stuff.
Yeah.
Like, forget about it. They love it. They eat that shit up. I'm telling you, it's like I get it.
It's true.
Hey, you know what? It's good to be the outsider.
Yeah.
In life, there's nothing wrong with that.
Oh, I like that.
Like, leave your home and people go travel.
Yeah.
And be exotic.
Do travel.
Be exotic. That's a good thing.
Do travel.
If you're the person that they just hear and see every day, familiarity breeds contempt, as they say.
I think they say it. It's true.
That's a thing.
I do love traveling. That's what I miss.
And that's back to the touring, right? Yeah. Right. But you get to walk to work. It's tough.
It's a tough life.
That's a tough one.
But I would never... I've been to Norway 8 times.
Norway.
Have you been to Norway?
Fish fingers. Norway. We know a remote fjord.
Gloucester.
In Norway. With every Jan Stangled. Shit.
I can't believe someone else knows that.
Ken Coomer, this has been incredible, man.
Oh, man, it's been a treat.
You know, you are sick, and I love it. I had no idea.
Yeah, we're just here working.
How demented you can be. But it's in the best way.
Oh, yeah.
In the best way.
We're only here so long.
I know. I get that, man. Like, you got a great spirit. And I think it comes through. That's why I love the audio format. It all really does shine through.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Versus video where people start clenching and feeling tight about...
We still did grow up on radio. Like...
Did you ever listen to the King Biscuit Flower Hour?
I did not, but I listened to other things. And I mean came home from school and put on radio. Like, that's how old.
The King Biscuit came on Sunday nights at 9 o'clock. I'd put on the Koss headphones, and it always started with the roar of applause. Tonight, from London, Frank Marino and Mahogany Rush. It was Black Sabbath in Italy. It was unbelievable. I wish they would... they rebroadcast those on a podcast... That's it.
But that's
it's a gummy, and I'm there, and that's it. I'm done.
Let's talk gummies in a minute. But what wouldn't this be on YouTube? Old episodes.
Well, it's a radio thing.
I know, but somehow people still do that. You know that, right? People record it on tape, right?
Like be on YouTube. Oh man.
Yes, they are. I'm saying, like, you could find like old Howard Sterns on YouTube. People upload because they were recording it
just
on some cassette. Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Absolutely.
If I find this, I'm going to send it to you. I'm serious.
Absolutely.
This stuff is... This is what made me want to be in a band.
Interesting. Because I've never heard of it.
It's called the King Biscuit Flower Hour.
I wonder if this was geographical. Like, being on radio. I don't know.
Well, it wasn't in the South. None of them were.
So where was it?
No, I mean, I listened to it at home, my parents' house. But it was broadcast through the local rock station.
Okay, you got me, man. I don't know this.
Gliders? Really. King Biscuit Flower Hour.
I know. Like, what is that, in a fucking cave?
Your day's been made, basically.
Like, seriously, I know. You're just like, dude, where are you from?
I don't know.
What country?
From New York.
I know.
Best pizza in New York.
you can't do it.
My wife's from New Haven, Connecticut.
New Haven, Connecticut.
Talking about over pizza?
What? How did you end up with a Yankee?
Oh, okay. So my wife was in a band, and that band's producer lived here, and they brought, she was in a duo in Los Angeles, brought him here to play. I was hired as the drummer. We bonded over.
Oh, you played together?
I played on a record.
Oh, okay.
Then she's like, I hate this business. The producer stole all the money. It's one of those stories. I would go to LA and play on records and go to dinner with her, the hot young thing. And we got to know each other. So we would talk on the phone, which I've never really done. She's in LA and I'm in Nashville, and we'd talk for hours on the phone. It's not, I want to get off the phone, you know? And so then she's like, she wanted to change. She moved here. We didn't move in together because we'd both done that in other relationships. She got an apartment. And then it was kind of like, that was it. But she got out of the music business. She's a author. She has 3 books. She has a health column with Forbes. She's badass. Damn. And she's not in the music business. So I don't get the knock on the door like, hey, let me sing on that. You know,
right.
You know.
Right.
And man, I know too many people that have their wives that are singers. And, you know, it just gets weird.
This is interesting you say that, because so many guys try to sell that as a plus.
That's what I mean.
And you're like, no.
No, it's not. Because you got to go in and be a couple together. So if you're working, I mean, I did her podcast. I recorded her podcast for her book. That was funny.
Okay.
I mean, it went great, but right. It was fun to have her in here doing it. And,
right.
Because right. She's smart, too.
Right.
You know? So she's like,
right.
I didn't like the way that sounded, the way you recorded it. I was like, what? You know? So, you know, we can get our dander off with each other.
Right.
And she was a personal trainer, so she'd work me out, and she said I was her worst client ever.
Well, you mentioned before you were once like 280?
240. It's a big boy.
What was going on? You just eating whatever you want?
Is that what was going on? In the van, stopping at Waffle House every night at 2 a.m.
That's what I thought. Okay, okay.
Scattered, covered chocolate milkshake, you know?
Plus, like I said, you're 6'5".
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. Yeah. You could be a really big boy with that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So we had to, let's get it down and get healthy.
Yeah, so you've changed all that, yeah.
Yeah.
You're on a whole program now?
Not a program. I mean, I stopped eating meat years ago. I'm a pescatarian. Oh. Or as they say in the South, a Presbyterian.
Yes.
No one understands what a Presbyterian
is. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's...
I can't eat meat. I can't eat meat or chicken or turkey.
Right. Favorite fish to eat?
Oh, if it swims, I'll eat it.
Salmon, number one, though?
I had sushi yesterday, so...
Well, you know, Zach Danziger gave me... I should open a fish shop.
You love fish?
Well, it would be called Salmon Dave. Thank you.
The joke right
there. That was the Zach Danziger.
That's pretty good.
I do give credit.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
It's not bad. Yeah.
I like that one.
Sam and Dave. Maybe I'll open a shop in Nashville. Who knows?
If you open a place in L.A. called Salmon and Dave.
I'm not in L.A. and I don't want to be in L.A. Okay? To all my L.A. listeners, I don't want to be in L.A. No, I'll go to L.A. We'll do some more shows out of L.A.
Yeah.
I'll go there.
Where do you go next?
Well, I like this system, by the way.
Go to a city and...
I like the binge. I'm calling it binge.
Yeah. Like how many drummers did you interview this week?
Too many, man. Like, seriously. Like, all of them.
And how great is...
I don't know if there's any left.
How great is Lem Star? Round of applause for Lem Star. That's what I call him. Lemmy?
Yeah.
Lemmy's good
I people. Like Lem's. You knew, huh? You heard. You heard things.
I've known Lem forever.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
But he told you, in other words.
Tell me what?
How did you know? How do you mean it? What do you mean? How do you know to bring up his name?
He told me that you were going to call.
Oh, okay. I see.
Oh, is there more to it?
No, that's it. I got you now.
Are you keeping something?
I forgot that I got your number from him.
Yeah.
No, I forgot that. That's why I was like, how do you know about Lem? Yeah.
Lem's great.
Yeah. No, I like this method, and I think I'll do it here again for sure. And then I could do the same in L.A.
Yeah.
I can go out there for a week and just...
Do you go to New York and do it?
I'm from New York, so I have family there. So, yeah, that's also... I mean, and where's Charlie Drayton? You know what I mean?
Have you interviewed Brian Blade?
No. Where does he live?
I think Louisiana.
Yeah, that's a thing, because I
think Baton Rouge. That's where their studio was.
I mean, I'd have to catch him on tour.
Him and Brady, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and Brady's here, right?
No. Oh. Brady's in Louisiana, I think. I think. Now, again, people move. Who knows?
But. Yeah.
Hey, did you ever know Carlo Nuccio?
No.
Drummer?
Oh, no. Carlo Nuccio.
He's no longer with us. He was in New Orleans. Man.
Well, do you know a lot of Louisiana guys or something?
Strangely enough, yeah.
Do you know George Richelli?
I knew who he was. I mean, I know who he is. I don't know him personally. No.
But no one ever knows who he is, which I'm impressed by.
Oh, no, he played with Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Great feel.
Yeah, great feel.
But I'm just saying, that was a guy I mentioned the guys, and everybody was like, don't know him.
Really?
Yeah, and I'd be
See,
like,
I'm a fan of drummers. Give me a drummer.
I know, but that's why I'm saying George Richelli is like a good one because no one ever knows him.
Oh, no, I agree. Do you know who Floyd Sneed was?
Yeah, that was hold on, just give me a second because I have to just let my brain settle. Hold on.
Go ahead.
He was in shit. I do know Floyd Sneed. It just kills me because Moreau was just talking about him. Three Dog Night.
Yeah, Thank you. Very good.
Took me a minute.
You got it though.
I was a little fuzzy there.
You didn't pull out any phone.
No.
You got to play the game for real, man.
No, there's no phones on this show. We don't do phones. People go over their phones. I'm like, no. Just keep talking. Just be the person who's like, I can't think of the name.
Yeah.
I want to hear you go blank.
I did it.
Anyway, I get you, man. You're a fan of drummers. I know. I get it.
I am a fan of drummers. Carlo Nuccio played with the Continental Drifters. This band was made of Susie Cowsill, that family.
Oh, yeah.
Peter Holsapple.
Yeah.
They were a great band, and they opened up for Wilco a bunch. And I would watch Carlo, like, throw up he had a Remo 4x14 piece of shit snare drum and some bullshit kit, and his pocket was monster. Steve Berlin from Los Lobos used to, I think, hire him and bring him out, or maybe it was Mitchell Froom. Someone used to bring him out to L.A. to play on records. Just, come on, Carlo. He was one of those, he was a special.
All right, I got to look into him, because I do not know this guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he's played on records, you know.
Okay, I believe it.
Yeah. All mostly right. From the 90s, you know, that's where those, yeah.
When did he die?
Recently, man. I think cancer or something.
Okay.
I'm gonna
check into this guy
year,
for sure.
Last year?
Yeah. I love it. I'm going to look into this guy. You did that bill, by the way, on that poster?
I did.
Okay, so you know Steve Gorman?
Talked to him 2 days ago.
Love it. Well, he lived here.
I love Steve. You know where he is now? Minneapolis.
Wow.
Hosting one of the biggest rock stations in the country.
He moved there for that?
Yep.
Cool. All right, good for him.
Yeah.
Hey, man, that's a voice for radio, bro.
Steve got it.
Wow, does
he got handed that. We used to play ping pong, you know, when you're out on tours. We were out with the Black Crowes. It might have been on this tour, all the Horde stuff. And we'd play ping pong. He's a very competitive individual like I am.
He also is quite tall, isn't he?
Yeah, it's a tall drummer club.
Yeah.
Did you interview Fred?
Eltringham, of course. Tall drummer.
I love Fred. Yeah, he's in the tall drummer club.
We talked about... Oh, no, that was another... Yeah, that was... that was Morrow. See, I'm... too many... See what happens?
Look at all these drummers.
But this is what happens. See, this is the binge method, and then...
So you have to go home and go through all this.
Things become blurry. Yeah, but at least I could do that one by one. You know
what
I'm saying? That's how you do it. Hey, come on, baby. That's how we do it.
No, it's true. Charlie Quintana. Was playing with
Joan Osborne?
Yes. This before she had her hit.
Bro, did you get to know Charlie?
Just a little bit.
Chalo?
Yeah.
What? Tell me.
He was a sweetheart. He kind of kept to himself a lot. He was a sweetheart, man. He was really nice to me.
This name just came up recently, too. It's interesting, because someone else mentioned it. Yeah.
He's no longer with us.
I know a girl in Texas. Her sister's baby daddy's uncle was Charlie. That was... Oh, you know drummers? You know Charlie Quintana? I was like, yeah. I was in touch with him. Dude, he was living in fucking Cancun. And he was like, I'm kicking it here. Like, because I was like, any plans at all to come to L.A. ever? He was like, no, I'm done.
He lived in Cancun?
At the end, yeah. And he was like, retired. But I was in touch with him. We were in touch. We were talking.
Oh, man. How was he?
You know, he seemed great. He seemed very happy. Like, done. I'm retired. Like, done.
Wow.
And I was like, but would you ever maybe visit L.A.? And he was like, it's possible.
Wow.
So I was like, well, we only do in person. Like, had I known the fucker was going to die, yeah, I would have been like, let's do a phoner.
Yeah.
But, you
or
know.
Let's get on a plane.
Charlie Quintana, bro. That, to me, like, see, that's, like, up there with George Riccelli.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he was, why did I see him on, someone sent me something on YouTube the other day. It was him. Was he playing with Dylan?
Yes, he did Dylan.
No, but he did it on, like, Letterman or
yes,
something.
Yes, correct.
It was excellent.
Same, bro.
Yeah, no,
he was also did that. Izzy Stradlin and the Juju Hounds. You work with Dan Baird.
Yeah.
Is the other guy
who's Izzy Stradlin and the Juju Hounds. Record brought up the other day, me trying to tell somebody that's one of the best groove records.
And because Charlie fucking Quintana.
I know. It's excellent.
And by the way, I'm saying you mentioned Dan Baird and it was the other guy from Georgia Satellites. The guitar player.
Oh yeah, yeah. Rick. Yeah, yeah.
Was in Juju
Hounds. Yep, that's right.
Yeah.
Wow, it all leads back to Juju Hounds.
Do you see what I mean? It all leads
back. But, you know, Ziggy Marley and the Melody Makers, right now we're looking at...
Yeah.
Tell your listeners, we're looking at the big poster.
It was a Horde Fest.
For the Horde Festival.
95.
Yeah, a long time ago. Yeah. And the Black Crowes were headlining. And Blues Traveler, I'm sure they're nice cats, but that's usually when I went to catering. You know what I'm saying?
I don't blame you, bro.
It's not my cup of tea, but man, they were great. But Ziggy Marley and the Melody Makers...
Fuck yeah.
That's still when Santa was alive. I would sit there. It was a lesson, and and on some of the shows, and they're not listed on there, the Staple Singers would open. And I'm talking about like when there's people just filing in, and there's Pop Staple up there sitting in a chair because he's old and going to leave us soon, and Mavis and the sister.
What about Taj Mahal?
Oh, that was fantastic. It's fantastic.
Shit, man. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, that was great. That was a great, great bill. Mother Hips, they were fun. They were from San Francisco. But it was great. Just to watch Ziggy Marley and the old cats from Bob backing Ziggy.
Damn, bro.
Like, man, they tuned the snare drum high. I'm telling you. It's like... I love the way they do that. I love that reggae. I'm a mega reggae drummer fan. That's what I look at on Instagram.
Yeah.
As reggae drummers. So they just send me feed after feed.
Right, right.
Like old guys. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
I do. I'm a fan of drummers.
I get that. No,
I
get
it. The whole cycle comes back to. But you know, if I was just a drummer, I'd either be on the road or waiting for the next, you know, session to be called. And that's not.
Well, it's a different. I know.
I do a little bit of both, but I don't tour.
Right, we've stopped.
And we're back to that yes, I would go for my 2-week vacation tour.
Right. Unless it's the list we talked about in the beginning.
The list.
And it was, you know who.
You know who it is.
You know
who it is.
You already know.
You know.
You already know. You know. Exactly.
The short first names, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Cher, folks. I mean, because if Cher calls, bro.
Cher would eat me alive.
You just
man.
Go, bro. You just go. You just go, bro.
Share with email
a lot. Let's do it for the bagel boy. You know,
that's
remember
it.
Remember Rob Camilletti?
Oh yeah.
I don't know how I pulled the name out. I don't even know how I did that. How did he do it? I don't know.
Share's a force, man.
Force.
I mean, my God.
Force.
What was I hearing the other day? Oh, I was listening to the Sunset Sound podcast. You know that one?
Don't.
Where they talk about records made at Sunset.
Oh Sound. Wait, on YouTube. I've seen it as a video.
Yeah, I listen as I've a seen, podcast.
Okay.
Can't just watch the video.
Gotcha.
But they were talking about Cher and how amazing she was.
Yeah.
Voice in the studio, just like.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible.
Hey, man, if I could turn back time.
Oh, but I'm.
No, come on. I like the robotic voice one. What's the other one? You know the one with auto-tune?
That's one of the first auto-tune.
I was like, she was the original auto-tune.
I think so.
You know?
And then T-Pain was like,
that's more
wait
my,
a minute.
That's more my kind of jam. Get up in the morning and dance, you know, making my coffee. Like, I believe in life after love.
I believe.
Well, you know, I believe.
Yeah.
That's
you have to believe.
Yeah. Ken Coomer, you have to
believe.
Okay?
That's it.
None of this, I'm hearing voices bullshit. That's Bootsy Collins up there.
That
you
is
got,
Bootsy.
You've got great stuff around here. I mean,
thanks,
I'm just
man.
Telling you, I could just eat some gummies, take some mushrooms, and just really, not like that's my thing, but, you know, it sounds good.
You could, though.
It just sounds good to say.
But Bootsy signed that for me, so I was happy about that.
This is a really cool room.
Thanks, man.
It's a very cool space here, folks. If you want to come out and record.
I really dig it.
What's it called again?
Cartoon Moon.
I like that. Where'd you get that?
It's my wife's publishing company.
Okay.
And so to give a little homage to the wife.
Okay. I like Cartoon Moon. I like it.
I threw it to her.
Yeah. I like it. Right on, brother.
Thanks, man.
Ken Coomer, thank you, man, for having me over.
Thank you, Dave. It's been a pleasure.
I love it.
Thanks for having me. Safe trip back to L.A.
Austin. Stop it. I do not go back to L.A.
I love L.A.
Love you, buddy. All right. Thank you. Love it.